item two, which is open public comment. And you're not first, Commissioner Keeney, but it's a pleasure to see you in the audience, but I'll be right with you. I'm going to call up two at a time, if I may. I want to say that Michael Crowder, he has two testimony forms in here for a good reason. I'll let him explain that. And then Susan Fleischman. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hello, and my name is Michael Crowder, and I live in West Richland, and I'm here today to talk about the corn pond issue. I have been a member of WDFW's Waterfowl Advisory Group roughly 15 years, and I have previously served as its chair. I have testified to this commission on a number of occasions on behalf of the Waterfowl Advisory Group, and I'm doing so again today, as well as a private waterfowl habitat biologist. I would like to start out by giving you a little bit about my background and qualifications to speak here on this issue. I have associate's and bachelor's degree in natural resources and environmental science, excuse me, and a master's degree in wildlife science from Purdue. I was an adjunct professor at Washington State University Tri-Cities and taught mostly graduate-level courses in wildlife science, wetland restoration, and ecology. I've been working on wetlands and waterfowl habitat management for 25 years in multiple states and in Canada. And in my main occupation since 2001, I've been serving as the general manager for the Barker Ranch, a fabulous 2,000-acre ranch with several miles of lower Yakima River frontage that is managed primarily as a duck hunting club with a working cattle operation. The current ownership group bought the ranch in 1994 and have partnered with the Natural Resources Conservation Service to secure a perpetual wetland easement on 1,865 acres, which is quite unique in a 6-inch to 8-inch rainfall zone. As part of the overall wildlife habitat management, we utilize flooded row crops as food plots, including the use of corn food plots. And notice I say corn food plots and not corn ponds, as it's designated in the journal. I personally hate the term corn ponds. These are not just corn ponds, but they're an important piece of overall management strategy for wildlife used in every state in the nation. Moist soil management, which is the management for early successional seed-bearing plants, is by far the vast majority of our operation, but we do have a small percentage of acres in corn and other grains which are systematically flooded throughout the fall, winter, and spring to extend the timing of available food for birds. The advantage of corn to other possible crops is that it stands out of the water so it does not rot when flooded, which allows for the food source to last all the way into the springtime, which is an important part in trying to provide a longer-term food plot for mostly ducks and cranes. Our goal is to hold and feed wildlife and birds from mid-September, so from today until mid-April. The use of these type of food plots along with moist soil management are an integral part of many, if not most, of the thousands of private, state, federal clubs and refuges all across the U.S. I personally talked to WFW biologists, conservation officers, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologists, internationally known and respected managers and professors on this issue, and they have shared fears there could be severe unintended consequences by trying to ban corn ponds or flooded grains. And I was told it could be nearly unenforceable due to the severe language that it would take to accomplish that. I have read the white paper provided to the commission titled Stop Corn Pond Hunting, and it is long on emotion and short on facts with no scientific basis at all. And as a biologist, I would hope that the game regulations are based more on science than emotion. Now, switching hats, I was authorized to speak here today as part of the Waterfowl Advisory Group. The Waterfowl Advisory Group discussed this topic in white paper at the April meeting in North Bend and voted 14-0 against accepting this premise and to leave the state waterfowl baiting definition as currently in place, which parallels federal law. Again, it was 14-0 against. After that vote, I put forth a second motion that passed by the WAG 13-1, and it stated, quote, the Waterfowl Advisory Group supports a variety of food resources for habitat management and that best management practices should include flooded food crops and moist soil management. There was also discussion on the fact that the paper refers to corn ponds as legal baiting. This management technique is not baiting, nor illegal, nor should it be. Per the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service waterfowl hunting and baiting pamphlet, which I have a copy of and can show you, it states, quote, "You can hunt migratory game birds, including waterfowl, on, over, or from standing crops or flooded standing crops. There are legal definitions of how crops could become baited if the grain is knocked over, spread, exposed, driven on, trampled, outside the normal agricultural planting, harvesting, post-harvest, harvesting manipulations or operations. As a longtime professional waterfowl and wetland manager, teacher, and mentor to hundreds of students and interns, the loss of this type of management tool is nearly unconscionable to me. There is zero scientific basis for considering acting on these recommendations made in this white paper. In my opinion, it is a false assumption to think that if corn food plots were banned, ducks would mass up on public ground and be a mecca for public hunters. As a few have stated in this process, this is simply not reality. Cropping patterns in Washington and especially in the Columbia and Yakima basins have changed dramatically over the last two decades. Changes from field corn to silage corn and sweet corn leave no usable food residue. Conversions of grain crops to vineyards and orchards have all combined to change the flyway and the total number of wintering ducks. It was quoted to me yesterday by a federal waterfowl biologist that the vast majority of waterfowl habitat in Washington is found on private ground, and this issue being discussed would affect duck populations from Skagit to Spokane, from Lewis and Soton counties, and everywhere in between. I've worked my entire professional career in this field and would extend a sincere invitation to each and every commissioner to take a personal tour of my ranch so I can show you how these food plots are utilized as a management tool. So in closing, I'd like to reiterate that these practices are specifically stated as legal in federal law. They are extremely common practice all over the nation for both public and private waterfowl managers. And I think most importantly, there is absolutely no scientific basis that shows there is an excessive harvest in Washington, the Pacific Flyway, the U.S., or even in North America. For all these reasons, I urge you not to change the current definition. Thank you for your time, and I will be here during the discussion at 2 p.m. Would be happy to answer any questions any time in between.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you for your testimony. It was very informative. Just curious, I was at the Othello Crane Festival a few years ago and heard a biologist actually from the International Crane Foundation speculating that Othello is probably every migrating lesser crane, sandhill crane, heading to Siberia stops in Othello. It was a very dramatic statement of the importance of the Columbia Basin to the migrating cranes. I was wondering, the corn there, is it managed in the same way for the cranes with the moist fields?
I can't speak to that refuge. What I can speak to is 10 years ago, before my ranch started to utilize those food plots, we had zero, no cranes. And we went from a flock one year to 10 flocks the next year. The next year we had 4,000, and now we have thousands and thousands. And last year, and I don't remember if it was a biologist or the manager of the refuge, they were taking a crane tour and they had no cranes.
Yeah.
They were in my front yard, and I literally mean my front yard. There's the Benton County actually got on me because I was creating a hazard. There's so many photographers and birders on the street. I suggested highly. I put orange cones out to make it safe for the birders. We do Audubon tours. To lose that type of management is, I don't understand why it would even be a discussion. That's not the waterfowl. That's me being passionate because I've spent my whole life dealing with this. So it's magical to be there in March.
And thanks for the testimony here today. A question on the possible effect of the process that you described for your ranching area on public lands. And I'll acknowledge that all that you've said about the benefits of your ranch to the waterfowl, I'll acknowledge those as positives. Your characterization that if there was none of this going on, that there would be massing of waterfowl on public lands is false. My question is not to that extreme. I think as you, it may have been in that white paper, or at least we heard testimony that the fact that your kind of an operation was going on made some effect on the amount of waterfowl available on public lands hunting. So in your professional opinion, do you think there is any negative detraction of any magnitude on the amount of waterfowl available to public lands due to the changes in the environment that have come about by you folks' initiative?
Well, I'm very clear in my opinion on this, and others will likely disagree with me, but to have tens of thousands of birds that are in an area, and I've struggled with local hunters near my ranch that shoot limits very commonly because they're birds that are leaving our ranch and they're hunting right next to us on the river. There's thousands and thousands of birds. We're 7 air miles from the Columbia. There's a constant stream of birds in and out. So we are feeding and preparing those birds for the winter and the springtime. And there is, it's only a benefit to the population as a whole. And do some of those birds get shot? Of course they do. Or that the money to put in those food plots wouldn't be there. I mean, that's just reality. I mean, the reason that the clubs do that is because it does hold birds, but it doesn't pull all of those birds away from public ground. I mean, that's, there's a plethora of scientific reports that state that. I can't state them now, but I've read them in the past. So it is a public benefit.
Commissioner Baker?
I also appreciate both your credentials and your testimony. We have heard about this over the years, haven't had this kind of a response, so I appreciate that. But my question is, do you on your ranch run one of these resorts where people pay you to come in and you
no,
guarantee
ma'am.
Bagged limits? So then the second question is,
I'm sorry.
Do you, is there hunting on your ranch? And if so, can the public come or is it specific people?
So there's multiple questions, and make sure I answer all of them. I did want to address the guaranteed limits. In my whole career, in 25 years in waterfowl, but I've been much longer than that, 40-some years, I have never ever seen an advertisement of guaranteed limits. It states that in the white paper, but if you read the advertisements that go along with it, it's simply not there. There is no guarantee. I have been a guide in the past. I am not a guide. I'm a waterfowl manager, and I manage for a private club. And then if they invite you to go with them, you're welcome to go, but it's not open to the public. We do a wounded veterans hunt every year, and we do a youth hunt, and we give all those hunts away to Richland Rod and Gun Club and DU chapters around the state. If I see a kid in town, I give him my number and say, on this day, we'll have a youth day. So we do open to the public, but it's not a public. You can't just give your $200 and come hunting. That's not what we're there for. But as I did want to address the guaranteed limits, because I've heard that multiple times, and I've hunted thousands of times, because in Indiana I guided in flooded corn, and if you think it's guaranteed limits, you're going to be sorely mistaken on a bluebird day. If you have good weather and the wind is blowing, you're probably going to do well. If it's not, It doesn't matter. I promise you, I have two-thirds, three-quarters, probably three-quarters of my ponds in moist soil management, which if you don't know what that is, that's smartweed and water grass, other small seed-bearing plants, and they're early successional, so you have to either disc or rototill. You have to have it bare dirt. They don't compete well with other plants. So we spend an immense amount of time and money, effort, keeping those wetlands, keeping the sod out, keeping them as high as quality as we can. But I'm in one side of my ranch is Richland, literally, the fence, and the other side is West Richland. So I've spent a crazy amount of money working to make sure we don't have a mosquito issue. I mean, you're getting into really big-time dollars for the public benefit, and we don't want to be a detriment and produce mosquitoes. So we've put in a lot of infrastructure in to be good neighbors and good stewards.
Commissioner Grego.
And thank you for your testimony. It supports what I've done a little bit of investigation into this. And, you know, one of the claims of the white paper is that, you know, it's just destroyed public hunting. However, a friend of mine operates the duck taxi service on Pottles Reservoir.
Mike.
And
Mr. Meesberg.
And he said it's really interesting because when the birds are present, the corn pond operations, do well, but so does he. It's all dependent on weather and the birds.
So I'm not going to name names.
Yeah.
However, if you track closely those advertisements, and when they're on Facebook showing pictures of those limits, I promise you, because I've paid attention, you could have those same limits on public refuges and public ground in the river because
absolutely,
the ducks are here.
Yeah.
When the ducks are here, I'm going to shoot them, and you're going to shoot them. That's why we spend the money we do. But I'm not the norm where I worry greatly about feeding them in February, March, and April, where maybe some places don't do that. But you have to understand, this is such a small, small amount of territory compared to the whole Washington state. It's fluffing the numbers. I mean, even if they would shoot X amount of ducks, that feels like it's a lot, it doesn't even register in the numbers.
Absolutely, and you know he very much supported that when the ducks are available, they get ducks too.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you had mentioned that he brought up to me and introduced me to a Ducks Unlimited biologist that supports the value of these fields for the returning flocks.
It's critically important.
Yes.
Yeah. If we didn't have that, we would not have the cranes on our place. And nothing brings me more joy in life than going out on a Sunday morning and going to my mailbox, which is right at the edge of my yard, and walking down with a box of Krispy Kreme donuts given to all of the photographers. And when the Audubon Society comes in, you know, obviously for safety reasons and for management reasons, we can't do that during duck season. But after duck season, we're good stewards and good neighbors. And so,
well, I have a last question for you.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your testimony. I have a long career in waterfowl hunting, and I'll speak to it at the appropriate time. But simple question is, your knowledge, we got Kyle here, if we need him to come up too. What is the trend, generally speaking, on waterfowl populations over the last 10 years?
Well, Kyle, you'll speak to that, right?
Yeah.
So
thumbs up or thumbs down? Okay, all right.
In general, it's good, and I'm telling my interns, I've had interns from seven different states the last two numbers, and by coincidence, my interns this summer were from Mississippi State, and I kept telling them, guys, we're in the good old days. Right now, it is the good old days. So if I could recreate my ranch and the ducks flying every year. Last year, we didn't have winter until February, and winter decided to come for 10 years' worth of winter. So,
Very good. Commissioner Smith.
Just driven across the upper U.S. from one side to the other, the potholes are all pretty full.
Yep. It was
In North Dakota, some of those potholes are a little threatened because of the the energy issues going
yes.
on. But familiar. I saw a lot of little winged critters
yeah.
going on there.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Appreciate you
thank
coming
you.
Up. You bet. Susan, thank you for being patient.
Well, hi. I'm nobody. I'm nothing. I'm a layman. I was conceived in Mazama, born in Republic, raised on a cattle ranch in Curlew, graduated from high school in Oroville, went to Wyoming for my working career for 30 years. My husband passed away in 2012. I came back home. And instead of speaking to the choir, I'm now fighting the choir on the west side. And I don't mean that meanly. I don't mean it literally. I'm from Eastern Washington. I was raised butchering animals. I've been a hunter my whole life. I've hunted in Alaska. I've hunted in Northwest Territories. I've killed bear. Back in the days here in Washington State, I killed cougar and both bear with hound dogs on a guided hunt. And now I live in Kettle Falls, Washington, right across the street from where I was born, Ferry County, Stevens County, Ponderay County. And what worries me about living there is I resent not being able to go up on Sherman Pass hiking by myself without a turkey gun and buckshot and bear spray and to feel safe by myself. I've always hunted by myself. I've hunted with my family, but I hunt by myself. In Wyoming, I hunted by myself. I've killed elk. I've killed deer. I've killed everything you can kill in Wyoming, including sage grouse, which is endangered now. And I resent coming back home and not feeling free like I did in the past. One thing that bothers me here is I don't see a lot of Eastern Washington constituents coming here to speak up for themselves. They tend to fly under the radar and not want conflict. I was going to go to the game department meetings this last month down the valley from Spokane to Colville, and they were called off. I resent that. I don't like being controlled by somebody threatening me and not me being able to give my opinion myself. I'm a game preserver. I don't overkill. Since I've been back to the state of Washington, I've gone in and out of, I'm not going to support them anymore. They're not for the game and fish anymore. They're for all the protected species now. I worry about the money that you guys spend and how much money of the sportsman's money that you spend and how much government money that you get to take care of all of these endangered species that you're bringing back. I personally feel like Washington State is too heavily populated. I feel like the state of Washington is too heavily populated for all these apex predators. I know what it's like in Leavenworth. The grizzlies will come right down in the valley and they'll attack you. The cougar will come right down there and attack you. I know what a cougar's like. I live on Peachcrest, and we have a resident cougar that brings deer up on people's back porches. I've deer fenced my place because the bear come in there and eat my apples. And I just have a little 5-acre plot. Since then, I've cut my deer fence down to just 1 acre because I like the deer going through. And I'd like to be able to put apples out and corn out to attract the deer, just so that they would be a little bit safer on my property than they would be on the public land, say. But I don't do that because I know that we're regulated by the amount of apples we can lay out or whatever. I saw my deer population behind in the Schneider's property on their alfalfa field. I saw the deer go from 38 last year down to five deer, five does, and fawns combined. I know I'm not supposed to talk about wolves right now, but I have two wolves spotted. Other people have spotted them between Kettle Falls and my house. That's just a few miles as the crow flies. We have a lot of cougar. I know that hunting cougar, we effectively have our hands tied if we can't hunt them with hounds. It's really hard to find a cougar track and then bound up in the hills looking for a cougar. It's by accident that a hunter kills a cougar these days. Bear are a little bit easier. You can catch them a little bit more in the apple orchards and the grain fields. I caught my bear coming off of a grain field. I didn't have to use the hounds that day, and he was absolutely great eating. The cougar I killed, I ate too. It's a novelty meat. It's a very clean meat, but I don't think I'd ever shoot a cougar again intentionally just to eat it for meat. And I don't care if I ever kill a cougar myself again. You know, it's like been there, done that, don't need to do it again. But I worry about all the farmers and ranchers and many farms where I live where these apex predators are coming down now and killing livestock, killing my friend's goats, killing my friend's sheep, happen to build high fences and have huge dogs just to maintain the predators from staying away from my property or our properties. I guess that's my big deal. I can't talk about wolves. But being able to bring back hound hunting for the predators shouldn't be a bad thing. I can kill a predator a lot cheaper than the game department can kill a predator. And I would like to be able, I know that wolf management recovery is past 100% on this side of the state. I don't see why we can't open that up for hunting. They'll never go to the west side. Major, there's too many people over there. They don't like the west side. I don't know what else I can say. I would just keep going on and on.
Well, you did well, and I can speak, I think, for most of us, or all of us up here. I appreciate you coming and speaking from the heart. And
I'm disappointed in not seeing the seats full of Eastern Washington people, because I'm going to start coming to every meeting.
Good, and I would encourage you when we get a break maybe to talk to some of the staff that's here.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know them, get to know what they do and where they're located and their phone number, email,
mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the kind of dialogue we need to have from people that have been other places, come back. Mm-hmm. What you brought up I think is really important, so I'll see if there are any other questions. Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you, Susan, for your testimony. Just would point out that in order to restore hound hunting, it will take the legislature.
I know.
That's a law.
I know.
So.
I know that. So I appreciate that the game department can hunt them with hounds.
Yeah. And
we just don't have enough.
That actually, the law was updated mm-hmm. this past year, and I think it's going to improve that resource mm-hmm. For at least these conflict situations.
It doesn't matter how many licenses we put out or how many months we extend of cougar hunting, we're not going to get any better of a
It's totally opportunistic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you again.
Okay, thank you.
If there are no other questions,
I didn't stutter.
And I'll take your word for the cougar recipe. I don't need to. That merganser, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's.
We have three more folks to come up, and I'm going to ask all three of you to come up at the same time, if you will. And it is my pleasure to ask Jay Keeney, one of our colleagues from the past, who was a magnificent participant at the commission level, a great leader and orator and. Good man, and we miss you, Jay, but get up here.
Beep, beep, beep.
And Carol Long and Jasmine Minbashian. I got it? Thank you. Jay, take it away.
All right. Well, thank you, Director Suzeline and Deputy Director and Chair Carpenter. That's a change since I was on the. And also all the new commissioners. We welcome your service to our state and all you I was going to say old commissioner, but that's not right.
Both.
How about longer-serving commissioner?
Watch out where you're looking.
Anyway, all you folks, thank you for this opportunity. I just wanted to come up and talk a little bit about what's happened in my life and revolving around wildlife in the last year since I've got off the commission. And there's been some great things. When I wrote down on the sheet, I just wrote positive partnerships, and I wanted to share some of those with you. The first thing is I've done a lot more hunting, a lot more fishing. Our group got 4 elk in Utah. I was able to get an elk in West Bar with a tag. And a funny story there real quick is as we got my elk out, me and my hunting partner, and it was about a 3-hour hike to get it in, you know, get in there and get it back out. And we were sitting along the lake, along the Columbia River, because you boat into that location. And we thought, well, let's have a beer. Let's celebrate. So we're drinking a beer, and my hunting partner says, we saw this boat coming. He said, cops, ditch the beer. And I said, it's legal to drink a beer. We don't have to ditch the beer. And sure enough, this boat pulled in, and out steps Enforcement Officer Dan Christensen and Jason Day. And when they came over and said, we've been looking for you, Commissioner, my partner just about dropped his beer. So that was a positive partnership there, and I just wanted to share that because wherever you go, there's WFW staff out there doing their job, and it was really neat to see them, you know, way out of their territory down in Grant County, just doing their job, you know, checking licenses and seeing how the hunt was going. So the other things I've been involved with, like I said, more fishing. I've got a chance to spend some more time with my family. I've helped my wife through a college algebra. She's going on a new career, and that was one of the most painful things I've ever done. I had to take the course myself. I just got a call 3 days ago. My daughter's in Venice and just got proposed to, so that's cool. And in about 5 weeks, I get to go to Kettle Falls, of all places, and get a new hunting dog, so that I'm looking forward to getting a new Springer Spaniel. But past that, the work that we're doing in partnerships, one of the things I wanted to mention was the biggest thing that you look out here and you see is this beautiful country, and a great partnership was put together, Medjool Valley Citizens Council, all kinds of public support, business people, local citizens, all 3 county commissioners, all representatives, Senator Cantwell, Murray, Representative Newhouse. A huge effort went into creating a 340,000-acre mineral withdrawal in the Medjool headwaters, and that was accomplished in this last year. Conservation Northwest, who I work for, was involved. Trout Unlimited, just so many partners, it was unbelievable. And I wanted to commend, like, Department of Wildlife staff was producing maps the day before we were having a meeting with Undersecretary Balash out here in this area that showed the major migratory path of the biggest mule deer herd in the state occurred right through where this mineral development could occur if this withdrawal was not accomplished. Those maps were, you know, provided Sarah Hansen and Scott Fitkin, and just, I mean, we asked for them, and we got them. It was just data right out of the field coming into a piece of paper that meant a huge amount towards the success of eventually getting legislation passed by Senator Cantwell and supported, like I said, unanimously to take this mineral withdrawal and make it law so this is permanently protected forever. And there's been some huge celebrations in this part of the state and this valley commemorating that effort. So that's the type of partnership that I see happening. It's conservation groups, it's hunting groups, it's fishing guides, it's mayors, it's county commissioners, all saying, we agree not on everything, but the things we agree on, let's stick together and get them done. I'm working on a project now for fencing along Highway 97 between Riverside and Tenasket. And that fencing project, we've asked for $4.5 million from the legislature to do 3.5 miles of fencing and underpasses to prevent one of the highest deer kill locations in the state. So vehicle deer accidents are occurring at an unbelievable rate in this location. We didn't get that money this year, but we had donations. Conservation Northwest held a capital campaign to raise money. Mule deer foundations from around the state provided money because this is one of the most important herds in the state. It is the most important mule deer herd in the state. And we had this money and said, well, what can we do? We didn't get the big dollars. And so we said, there is an underpass. If we improve it at Janus Bridge and you put up fence to drive deer towards that, we're going to save a lot of deer. And we're doing that right now. In fact, the crew is out working. I'm a little nervous because I need to be on site for a lot of this. But the partnership there between the Department of Wildlife, Department of Transportation, local landowners. That's been my job to work with a lot of those folks, and I want to tell you that some of the testimony you've heard up here today, people were inviting you to go out with them. People are saying their side of a story. It's so important to listen to that. And for instance, on this fencing project, if I hadn't been talking to the local ranchers, I wouldn't have learned what I needed to learn to help direct this in a better direction that they're satisfied with, that work better for the deer, you know, and for the whole process of spending dollars on protecting vehicles, our people, and wildlife. So that, listening to those ranchers, has made my summer, actually. I've made some good friends, and I'm learning even more that public input is not just what you hear up here in 3 minutes from anyone, but it's actually getting out in the field and spending time and kicking some dirt, or in some of your cases, getting out on the water. I should not eliminate fish as an important resource. I just tend to focus more on the fur and feathers, but it's so important for these partnerships. There's a lot of other partnerships we've been working with, getting things done. As Commissioner Thornburn said, there's sharp-tailed grouse. You know, we have a project going in Okanagan County that helps pay for some of that translocation with in partnership with the Department of Wildlife. I can't give enough praise, actually, to Department of Wildlife staff, even in our fencing project, that we needed a maintenance agreement with the Department of Transportation that had to be done with the Department of Wildlife. And that took some effort to get. And it was local people. It was our local WDFW person, Justin Hogg, working with the regional office. Mr. Brown is here to talk about that a little bit, I think. Jim Brown, sorry, I'm talking too fast.
Sorry, Jim.
And, you know, they stepped up, you know, and they took it to the highest level, to Director Suzwine. And so we've got this in place. We're going to put this fence in. And the neat thing is the carcass data at that location, that 1 mile that we're going to be fencing, is about 30 animals, 25 to 30 animals per year over the last 20 years. That's carcass cleanup. That number can be multiplied by 5 to get an accurate estimate of the actual deer killed there. That's 150 deer. So when you think about all the things we can do, something like this has immediate effect. And I'd like to recommend that you as a commission think a little broader, think about the types of partnerships you need to protect wildlife with the legislature, with Department of Transportation, and try to get a funding and spending package of money that can be used for highway connectivity, migration corridor type projects that could be used around the state for priority areas. And I would suggest the one we have going on Highway 97 is a big one. So with that, I probably need to, I don't hear the gong anymore when our 3 minutes is up.
We didn't have that many people sign up, so I've been a little bit loose on that. But
I'll open up for questions.
I don't have any questions. I just have two comments for you, Commissioner Keeney. One is, it's nice to see you again, and it's really nice to hear you again. The other one is just some personal advice. You said your daughter was just proposed to?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if you got any extra time, but you probably need to get a job on weekends because...
we're working on
having
that.
Having just married off my oldest one, ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching. So, good to see you, Nate.
Thank you.
Commissioner Thornburn.
Yes.
Yeah, good to see you, Jay. So, mule deer. As I said, I was camping here in Konkanooli. Oh my, it does look like a healthy herd. but I did pass that transect of the highway, and they are certainly are on the edge there. I was real surprised. I think it was on the Tonk Creek unit where I flushed 2 whitetails, a doe and a yearling, it looked like. Getting a little incursion, or are they?
They've been around. They've always been around. I'm not sure if they're outnumbering mule deer in any sense, but they're definitely in the area. And I would like to make one more quick comment on some of the testimony and some of the discussions you will have in the future, I'm sure, on some of these issues of predators, whether it's cougar or wolves or grizzlies. You know, I understand we got to listen to that local, the people that are affected the most. You've got to pay attention to those folks. You've also got to pay attention to the science, because the science is giving you that that narrow slice of whatever problem they've been identified to look at, and trying to give you correct information, as best data as you can have. And I remember going through this when we talked about cougar information and cougar seasons and cougars in the past. It's always got to come back to the science with that open ear to how it affects people. And I would just encourage you to get out on the ground when you're trying to get that information.
Commissioner Smith?
Commissioner Keough wanted to know if you've had time to complete your tour guide of a greater Spokane.
We'll discuss that at lunch, maybe.
Did you hear that?
I did. Oh, yeah. You're up, Commissioner Keough.
Oh, no. I will say one thing. I remember, good to see you, Commissioner Keeney. I do remember when your last commission meeting, and you talked about one of your, you thought your best, one of your biggest accomplishments. There were many, of course, but the one was the rule about allowing people to claim carcasses. And on my way, my wife and I were had dinner in Twisp last night, and I saw a carcass, and I thought of you. So,
well, now that you brought that up, I can hardly go in a grocery store, it seems like, when you get out in the public, without having somebody come up and say, "Hey, I put another deer in my freezer. Thank you again." In fact, one thing that worried me, though, was one person came up and said, "I put three in my freezer this year. I don't think I'm going hunting." So I didn't want to affect hunting license sales, but it's been very popular. And if I'm known as the roadkill commissioner, that's fine with me. No.
Jay, thanks for coming. I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you very much, and good to see you all.
Commissioner Linville. Oh.
That's my favorite reg on the planet, right? So I just want you to know that my livestock guardian dogs are well-fed because of that rule, and it saves me gobs of money, which in turn allows cougars to be on our ranch without interacting with the livestock. And so it's a snowball of goodness, Jay. Thank you.
And thank you, Molly, for your service, too.
Okay. Thank you, Jay. Carol, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Carol Long, and I live in Chewila. And for full disclosure, I am not currently a member of any wildlife, hunting, or conservation groups. For several years, I was a member of both the Nature Conservancy and the Cousteau Society for the reasons that, one, they're very adamant about nonviolent. They're very against any violence when it comes to help protecting the environment. And also, they actually use their money and resource to protect truly endangered species and habitats. The only irons I have in the fire is the people I love from Chewila and a quarter horse mare who I now have $1,500 into, 6 months of doctoring her leg after a cougar put her through the fence. Thank goodness she's fine. And I learned a lot about medical doctoring on horses. And I am here today to talk about the wolves because as citizens of Eastern Washington, we have now been denied face-to-face public input. And we will discuss that more tomorrow. So I am going to talk about wolves. Several years ago, I spoke with a WDFW supervisor in our area about the wolves moving into Northeast Washington and voiced my concerns on how they would impact the environment. He told me the WDFW had a plan. He said that the number of wolf families would be limited to 16, that the size of the packs would not be allowed to become too large, and that they would be spread out across the state to minimize the impact. While I was skeptical, he seemed to believe that his agency would actually follow that plan. My skepticism now seems to be warranted. No matter how they came to be here, there are far more than 16 packs, and most of them are still located in Northeast Washington. They are devastating the ecosystem in our area, including the extinction in Washington State of the Selkirk Mountains woodland caribou. They, along with the cougars, have killed off the vast majority of the white-tailed deer, as evidenced by anyone who lives in my area. For a while, just by looking out your car windows, you can see the difference. This large decrease in the prey base has forced the wolves to seek out other sources of food, such as livestock and pets, and has caused them to move into populated areas. They are also forcing cougars out of their territories, especially large toms that normally stay up higher, and are causing them, too, to come down to seek out food, thus increasing the threat to public safety. When I look at social media and attend meetings such as this one, I realize that no matter what you do, you, the WDFW, you're never going to be able to please everyone. I think that the majority of the people in the state realize that wolves are here to stay, but also that they need to be managed so as to have minimal impact on both the ecosystem and humans, including pets and livestock. I think that most of the people in this state would be happy for you to start managing them by translocating some of these packs throughout the state. There are over 5 million acres of publicly held lands west of the Cascade Crest that could now support multiple wolf families. I've spoken with those on both sides of this issue who would be willing to support the WDFW in this effort. Translocation would accomplish several things. It would save some of the wolves that might have to be otherwise destroyed as food sources run out. And I've talked to biologists, and they said they don't know what the tipping point is, but at some point, with the predators we have increasing and the deer undulates, especially deer population decreasing, at some point that is going to happen if nothing gets done. It would leave more prey for the remaining wolves and the cougars, which would help the declining deer population. It would also allow some of the cats to return to their territories, thus increasing human safety and that of livestock and pets. The losers in such an endeavor would be the people on the west side of the state. If you, as the Game Commission and WDFW, choose not to manage the wolves there any better than you have done so here so far, and if you allow another dilemma to occur, such as the one we now find ourselves in here in Northeast Washington. I know that with budget cuts, money may be one of the limiting factors preventing you from this option. I think that a part of the money and resources can be found by private efforts from both camps in order to help move the wolves. I and a lot of people I know would be glad to help you guys in any way that we can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jasmine, you're up, and Director Suzuwin, you're in the bullpen.
My name is Jasmine Minbashian, and I'm the executive director of the Metau Valley Citizens Council. And I would just welcome all of you to the Metau. It's really exciting to have the commission meeting here, so glad you're here. I also previously, seems like years ago now, was heavily involved in helping develop the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan and served on the working group that ushered the plan and worked it through the commission at that time. It's definitely interesting to see how much has changed and how much has evolved since that day. I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the Citizens Council. We've got over 600 members here in the Metau Valley, and our mission is to protect the natural environment of the Metau, but also to protect the rural character of this region. And as citizens that live on the very edge of one of the largest, wildest landscapes left in the lower 48, the North Cascades, we take our responsibility as stewards of this land and the wildlife it inhabits very seriously. We really value the wildlife that lives here and that this incredible ecosystem supports. Even the toothy ones, the cougars and the wolves and even grizzly bear, we feel it's a privilege to be in a landscape that can support that rich array and diversity of wildlife. And so we also, though, because we support keeping the rural character of this valley, feel that supporting local agriculture is extremely important, and maintaining open space and having a place where agriculture can thrive goes hand in hand. So we see all these goals as working together. To that end, I just want to share how important WDFW is to this community, and especially your staff is incredible. You have a really fantastic local staff here and some pretty incredible local biologists, and we work with them a lot, and their expertise is really impressive. And so I just wanted to urge you to consult with them and integrate their perspective when developing any rules or policies. They're a tremendous resource to this community and to the agency. Also, wanted to reiterate when we were developing the plan just how important it was going to be to focus on continuing to provide tools to help people coexist, people and wildlife coexist. And if anything, that has not changed. The need has gotten even greater. And sometimes it's easy to lose sight of that when emotions get heated and people get polarized and there's a lot of heated rhetoric. But just this is more important time than ever to stay focused on the science and really the collaborative approach and focus on the solutions. I know this is a really difficult time, and I just want to say thank you. You all are here as volunteers, and I really appreciate the hard work that goes into developing some of these policies. So your work is deeply appreciated, and just really encourage you to follow the science and stay on a collaborative path and focusing on reducing conflict using as many tools as possible. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I want to close this agenda item by just expressing my appreciation for the people that came forward under open public comment today. Very articulate, very passionate, very involved. Very healthy to hear from you all. Thank you very much.